Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Fiction, science fiction, horror, fantasy, crime, LGBT thriller.
You have now entered the House of Mystery with your hosts, Eric Shapiro, David North Martino, John Copenhaver, and Al Warren.
Heard on KCBQ 106.5 FM Los Angeles,
102.3 FM Riverside,
and 1050 AM Palm Springs.
Welcome back to the House of Mystery on KKNW 1150 AM Seattle and 106.3 FM Los Angeles. Now today we are bringing up a book called The Flying Taggers, and we've got the author, Sam Kleiner. Thank you for being on the show.
Thanks so much for having me on.
So Sam, before we get into the book, excellent book, I've been listening to it actually, not reading it. Eyes are getting on. So tell us a little bit so the listeners know who you are and how you got into writing this particular story.
Well, thank you so much again for having me on. I'm originally from Tucson, Arizona, and grew up out there. My grandfather was a navigator on a B-25 in the Pacific. And I remember as a kid, he would tell me about his experience in the war, and he actually lived up in Tacoma and would come down sometimes, and we'd go out to the Pima Air and Space Museum, and he would show me the planes out there. So I kind of always just grew up with this interest in World War II, and particularly in the Pacific, and aviation. And I studied history in college, and then in graduate school, wrote a doctorate on this period in history, this kind of fascinating period right before World War II, or right on the cusp of World War II, fascinating debates about isolationism, America's place in the world, while these wars are raging across the Pacific and the Atlantic. And I think we all kind of grew up with this idea that World War II started on December 7th, 1941, but I encountered this as one of these incredible stories of really how things aren't always as they appear to be when we first encounter them. And the Flying Tigers were this secret unit of American pilots who were sent over to aid the Chinese before World War II, before we got into World War II, so that is something that grabbed my attention very quickly, and I just kind of decided that I wanted to write this, and it's just an amazing human story that hadn't really been studied before.
Yeah, I was really surprised. I had no idea that this even went on. It's kind of strange that it hasn't really been publicized before this very much.
Yeah, it's one of those amazing things where the image of the shark-faced P-40 is one of the defining images of World War II, but there hadn't been a lot of attention paid to who are the pilots behind this this unit, or what are their stories. And so one of the first things I did in my research was try and figure out who are these people. And I found a collection of love letters, if you can believe it, in an archive at Yale that were between a pilot and a nurse in the unit. And these were just incredible letters that showed this kind of ordinary romance in some ways that was taking place in the most extraordinary circumstances. So I set out over a three-year period to try and find as many diaries and letters and combat reports and photographs from the unit as I could. And I ended up working a lot with the families of the Tigers and going to their reunions and kind of being welcomed into this community around the unit. And they entrusted me with a lot of never-before-seen materials that allowed me to really tell the human story of this famous unit.
Yeah, that's an important part. Yeah. It gives life to the story for people to relate to. Now let's set the time. So now this is the summer of 1941 when this begins, and so this is before Pearl Harbor, and before like America was still relatively in a peace state. They weren't involved in anything at the time, and so explain what happened. What did America do, and what did they send these guys to do?
It's a great question. So the story of World War II, and you know, generally when we think of World War II, we may think of Europe and the landing at D-Day, which is the anniversary is tomorrow, or the flag raising Iwo Jima. But we typically don't think of China as really being part of World War II. And China was actually one of the four core allies during the war, and for them, the war went back as far as 1937 with the start of the Second Sino-Japanese War, when Japan invaded China and the Chinese were pushed back into a small corner of the country down in the south in Kunming and Chongqing, and they were really being bombed with these devastating raids. And not a lot of Americans know this story, but that was a very brutal part of World War II. Obviously, there's the rape of Nanking and just a whole host of massacres and a huge loss of life from these severe bombing raids. And my story focuses in some ways on that experience through the lens of a handful of Americans who were there really as mercenaries, including Claire Chennault, who later became famous as the commander of the unit, and working with the Chinese Air Force. So it's just this incredible story. And that eventually turns into an official American unit. The Americans decide they're going to send over military pilots who were given passports listing false professions on them to disguise their mission, and America was secretly going to aid the Chinese because Roosevelt wanted to, both in the European and in the Pacific theaters, take action where he could to aid the Allies, calling America the arsenal of democracy, as he put it in one speech, talking about taking measures short of war. And so obviously, you know, this is a grave act that violates the isolationism embodied in the Neutrality Acts in Congress, and goes against the principles of neutrality and international law. But Roosevelt saw that there was a real need here. And so you have these young men who are kind of casually recruited on this mysterious mission to go to the Far East. So Pappy Boyington, who's actually from Tacoma, is one of my main characters, and he talks about going to a bar in Pensacola where he's stationed as a Marine aviator, and someone comes up to him and says, you know, how would you like to go into the Far East? You know, you'll get a chance to see some real combat, and he says that sounds like a good idea, mostly because he had a lot of personal problems, he had a lot of gambling debt, his wife had left him, and he didn't really know anything about the Far East, but that sounded like a good thing to do. So for so many of these guys, this is just a great adventure. One of my favorite pilots is this guy from Iowa. He writes in his diary when he gets on the ship going over about how this is his first time on a body of water bigger than a lake back home.
I was going to say, just before you jump in, Kevin, specifically, then Roosevelt sent these guys secret, but was it just Roosevelt, or was it the was it a certain organization like CIA, or was it the Congress? Like, how did this happen without anybody knowing about it? Like, who was behind it?
It's a great question. So, the CIA, you know, comes around later after World War II, and actually Chennault plays a role in some ways in helping get it started because his private airline becomes involved. So there's a lot, and I have a whole chapter on this question, and it's a It's just this fascinating story of backroom dealings in Washington. There's actually a lot of commercial activity around this. So there's one guy who has a company that's making a lot of money off this, and they basically set up shell companies to funnel aid that was supposed to go over to China that was more like commercial aid, and it gets siphoned off to this front company, which is then paying for these planes and these pilots to go over. So all these guys who are leaving the U.S. military sign a one-year contract with a private company called Camco, which was a exporter of planes. And so this was really one, you know, I think a fascinating mix of commercial activity with government activity. And it kind of in some ways sets the stage for things like Iran-Contra and later things that proved more controversial. But because obviously World War II is, you know, seen as kind of the good war, we don't really have any, you know, the same kind of qualms we would have about something like this today.
So what was the criteria?
So in some ways it was, you know, they were looking for experienced pilots, and they were looking for people who were willing to do this. So a lot of the pilots they recruited had some kind of connection to the Far East in the sense that they had a family member there who had been from there, and some of them, their parents had served as missionaries. There's one woman actually in the unit. Her name is Emma Foster, and she's one of a couple nurses actually. And that's the love letters that I found at Yale. But she had served as a she had studied abroad in China when she was in college at Penn State, and just kind of fell in love with the country and was looking for an opportunity to go back and saw this as one of those opportunities. So you see people just coming with a whole host of different motivations. I was just down in Columbus, Georgia a few weeks ago seeing the last surviving Flying Tigers, and his name's Frank Lozanski. He's become a good friend in the process of writing this book, and Frank was really a child of the Great Depression in Detroit, Michigan. He talks about how when he was growing up, his family was so poor that he'd go down to the train tracks to pull up little pieces of coal that he could use that had fallen off a train to heat their home. And, you know, for him, this, you know, he had joined the Army Air Corps, and he's being offered a lot of money now to go join this unit. And so that definitely played a role in it. Some people call these guys mercenaries. I don't think that's really exactly the right term, because they were more adventurers than anything else. But the money definitely played a role in what motivated these guys to go. And it was really more like a frat party than anything else when they first got over there. They were stationed at the secret base and were drinking heavily, and there was some training going on. But then after Pearl Harbor, they quickly had to, they were pretty much the only Americans who were in place to fight back against the Japanese. So they rushed into battle over Kunming, China. Their first battle is December 20th, 1941. And they shoot down a number of Japanese bombers. And most Americans couldn't point to Kunming on a map, but this quickly became one of the great stories from the early days of the war, because you have a whole host of American losses happening across the Pacific and a fear that America was going to be invaded. And here's this kind of ragtag crew of pilots who are basically coming to the rescue. So overnight they become these kind of heroic figures. But in that, the mythology that grew up around that, the John Wayne movie and so on, the real story's been lost. So that's really what this book is about.
So how many, at this point in time, how many are left?
So there's now only one left, this gentleman, Frank Lozanski, who I just went down to see. He's 97 years old. So we just had a piece on CNN on Memorial Day, which was really great. You know, it's been great to be able to assure him, you know, that this story is going to live on for future generations and is finally being told. And I've formed really great relationships with so many of the family members, and with Father's Day coming up, it was something I was thinking about, that so much of this story now is carried on the shoulders of the children of people who were in the unit or other relatives who've decided that they want to make a considerable investment of their own time in ensuring that the legacy of the Tigers lives on. So they, starting in the 1950s, would have these annual reunions, and they still have them every year to try and come together and talk about the experience of the Tigers. So there's really just this marvelous community that's grown up around this, and I think that it is a story that's important. It's important that we remember this history, and it's important that this lives on.
So, no, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, when they were over there and they had, and Pearl Harbor happened, so they started taking the initiative to fight against the Japanese. How well did they do? Like, how many of them actually survived the fight?
Well, it's a great question, and so the in total there were a number of them, over 20 that were killed in combat in this period between December 41 and July 42, when the Tigers officially disbanded. And those were major stories in their own right in the country. And I talk about some of those pilots who didn't make it home, including Jack Newkirk from Scarsdale, New York, and he'd kind of become a household name. And so when he was killed in March of 1942 in a raid in Thailand, that was a major headline that was across the country. And so in July of 1942, the unit was merged into the official Army Air Corps, and many of these guys decided they were going to go home and then kind of rejoin the fight. So this guy, like Bill Reed, the pilot from Iowa I mentioned, decides he's going to go home, and so there's a huge homecoming parade in Marion, Iowa. They throw Bill Reed Day, and the governor comes out to speak, and there's a parade unlike anything anyone had seen before in the state of Iowa. And Bill Reed's there, and he gives a speech about, you know, how proud he is to be a Tiger returning home. And then there's still a war to fight, so many of these guys ended up going back to do different things. Bill Reed ended up returning to China and was eventually killed in 1945 as part of a raid. And Pappy Boyington, who became one of the famous pilots from the unit, would go on to form his own unit, the Black Sheep Squadron, for which he'd become famous. There's a TV show, Papa Black Sheep, about him. He was shot down and held as a prisoner of war by the Japanese for years and presumed dead. And only at the very end of the war, when they were liberating these POW camps, did they find him there still alive. So these guys would go on to do just extraordinary things. But the thing that's interesting to me is, you know, whatever they ended up doing later in life, they kind of always held this pride of being a Flying Tiger. That was the thing that had really been the most important thing that mattered to them. It was something that most of them had done in their early 20s, so these reunions took on a very important feel to them because it was a chance for them to reconnect with their squadron.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Were they, like I was going to, like you mentioned the one pilot that had kind of a troubled life and they, and he went, you know, into battle for them and stuff. What about the others? Now, were everybody in the same situation, or were they sort of more of a regular family life? Like, how did they maintain family life during this time?
That's a great question. Yeah, it's so hard for so many of these guys during the war. In fact, Frank Lozansky, who's the last surviving Tiger, left behind a girlfriend back in Michigan, Nancy, and he came back and married her after he got back in 1942, and they were married for over 70 years. So for so many of these guys, they just have extraordinary lives. But these guys really came from all walks of life in America, and that's one of the things that I think is so compelling about them. You have guys in here who are graduates of Ivy League schools and come from wealthy backgrounds. You have guys who came from, like Lozansky, real children of the Depression who had very hard-scrabbled upbringings, and everywhere in between. And so that kind of diversity of experience really was part of what made the unit so fascinating, was, everyone just kind of was in it together for this common objective.
So what do you think about this now? Did I guess what I'm trying to get to is, did they have any awards or presentations or anything given to them for everything they did?
It's a great question, and in some ways they weren't really officially acknowledged as even part of the U.S. military until 1991, mm-hmm. So 50 years after their action. And there was a reunion held in the 1990s in Texas where they were presented with a series of medals, and by that point there were not many of them left. One guy was there, walked across to get his medal with a seeing eye dog, and commented on how extraordinary it is that he was finally getting his medal a little bit too late. So the Flying Tigers definitely were part of our national conscience around the war. People recognized that image, but the actual men weren't really honored for what they'd done, and so many of them were in some senses bitter that they hadn't really been properly acknowledged. Claire Chennault, who was the commander of the unit, was bitter basically for the rest of the war. He commanded American air forces in China, and never felt like he got the resources that he needed, and he felt like he could have done more to win the war if he had been given more resources and had grand ambitions of attacking Japan from the Chinese mainland that were somewhat extravagant, but was his belief that that was the best way to win the war. So when the war was over in 1945, there was a big parade for him down in New Orleans, and he went home to his farm in Louisiana. But he decided that after basically being away for 8 years, the 5 years of World War II and three before, that this wasn't home, that he felt more at home in China than he did in his native Louisiana. So he ended up going back to China and spent the rest of his career in some senses working for Chiang Kai-shek and Madame Chiang, the leaders of nationalist China, even as they were kicked out of China and then sent to what's now Taiwan. Basically would spend the rest of the his life kind of is in some way engaged in this fighting. And I mentioned earlier about the CIA. The CIA, part of the CIA's start was doing covert operations around Southeast Asia. And Chenault had a private airline called CAT, and that was actually secretly bought by the CIA in the 1950s and was utilized to conduct secret missions around Southeast Asia. So again, you see this kind of, you know, marriage between commercial interests and secret government activity. And so a lot of that, which still happens today, has its roots in the story of the Flying Tigers. And so I think, you know, it's a great story, but also I think it gives readers a lot to kind of think through about, you know, what's you know, how U.S. foreign policy works and about our relationship with China today.
Yeah, or what about his men? You know, that's what he had to be thinking about. What about my men? Why aren't they being recognized for this?
Absolutely. He writes in one of these letters that I found about, you know, the feeling of, you know, that he's been losing men for years and they become like sons to him. And so that was always something that was very challenging for him, was that he, you know, formed these deep personal attachments, but had to, you know, kind of wage a war. And that necessarily meant that men were going to get killed. So then this pilot from Iowa, Bill Reed, was killed in 1945. He wrote in a letter that it was basically like losing a son. The war was extremely long and extremely painful for so many of these men. And I think that comes through. You know, it's obviously, you know, the war had an important mission, taking down fascist Japan and going after Nazi Germany and defeating both of them and Italy. But the human cost of it is something that we don't always think of. And so that really comes across for in these guys who are engaged in this war over many years.
Did he ever write to any of the families?
Yeah, it's a great question. He writes extensively, you know, we think to his wife. I've worked with his family to get all the letters and diaries that he has. But after the war, he divorced his first wife and then moved back to China and married a younger woman, a Chinese woman who became known as Anna Chenault. She actually just passed away a few months ago. I was able to interview her 2 years ago. And his first wife burned, as the family tells me, burned the letters that he had sent over the years. So there were only a handful that survived. So it's a loss to history, but you can kind of understand her anger in that, I'm sure. And it's just there's so many human parts of the story that really come through, and that's what I was trying to convey. And I think listeners, you know, if you have an interest in this period in history, so many of the photographs are also really captivating because they come from these, you know, private collections of families who've been saving these photographs as family heirlooms for decades, and are kind of put together in a way that you kind of have a sense of really what the story is with these photographs are part of the story.
But this is so isolated. Why isn't anybody trying to make a television series about this? Like, you know, growing up, I remember Torah, Torah, Torah. And, I remember so many others. And why isn't anybody trying to do this?
Well, I think we got to get the word out. I think it makes for a great movie. You know, there's obviously the original John Wayne movie from 1942 called The Flying Tigers. It's not a particularly factually accurate account of the tiger story, but it's a good movie.
Yeah.
There's a great story here that's waiting for someone to be told. And the interesting part to me is that, you know, these guys are like famous in China. That the Fei Hu, the Flying Tigers, are like a household name. So when these guys would go back to China in later years, they were swarmed on the streets like they were heroes. So it's just an amazing, connection that we have with China today, that we share this history, really. And I do think that there's an important story there that can help to, you know, kind of bridge the divide and remind us, you know, with as much as in the news about all the confrontations with China over, you know, real issues, But we do have this shared history of working together, and it's not something that we should discard.
Yeah, you know, why not? You know, with today's politics, you know, with the way everything is going on a global scale, you know, why not, you know, have this? You know, this brings us together.
Absolutely. I think it brings us together with China, and I also think it brings us together as Americans. You know, I think that one of the things that I really enjoy about this story is, you know, you don't know if these guys are, you know, Republicans or Democrats or what their politics are. You know, they all just had kind of a common mission. Even at these reunions today, you know, you get these families together and they come from all different kinds of walks of life and I'm sure have different views on the world, but they're all just there to kind of, honor this unit and honor the mission. And the men themselves came from all different walks of life and had faced, you know, against really unbelievable odds, faced a common challenge. So it's just an incredible story.
When you were doing the research and all this stuff and you were finding the families and people involved, how easy was it to get information and how were they reacting to a book?
Well, I think they're really happy to see, you know, a younger historian come along and want to carry on the legacy of this story. And that is, you know, really what I've been trying to do. So I've been really, you know, privileged to have the chance to work with a lot of them in bringing this story out, and they've been very appreciative. So it's been a really great alliance. And as a writer and historian, I feel really lucky to have found kind of a community that's welcomed me in to kind of help share their story with the world.
Now, what do you hope the readers will get out of the book?
I think this is one of the great stories from the greatest generation. I think it, you know, just kindles everything that's special about that era and that generation. I think that you know, there's kind of everything in here, from foreign intrigue to a love story to aviation combat and diplomacy. So I think that there's I hope that people can enjoy it on its own terms and help us to appreciate our legacy.
What story stays with you has affected you the most and stayed with you that you've learned about this? What personal story?
That's a great question. I think a lot about there's one raid where these guys are on and they see as they're returning from it that one of their planes is trailing smoke and isn't going to make it back, and they watch as the plane starts to go lower and the pilot bails out and he's over enemy territory in Thailand and is taken, they don't know this, but he's taken prisoner by the Japanese. At the very end of the war, one of the guys who was on that raid was there when he was smuggled out of his POW camp and was brought back to their base. So it's just a remarkable human story. There's so many of those that are in there, and I think that listeners will really enjoy it, and obviously we think it makes a great gift for Father's Day, and hope you, people check it out.
What's the biggest effect it had on you? What's the biggest change you find yourself feeling after this?
Yeah, I just think, you know, it's a great reminder of how, you know, beneath every headline there's just a fascinating story, because the tiger is really just kind of a footnote or a headline from a bygone era, and beneath it you can just find an amazing universe of a real human story.
Wow. It's just an incredible book, and again, we recommend everybody pick it up. We will have it linked to our website. Also, do you have any contact information or anything that if people want to get a hold of you as the writer?
Yeah, absolutely. People can find all my contact info and information at flyingtigersbook.com.
Fantastic. Again, the book is called The Flying Tigers, and the author is Sam Kleiner. Thank you for being on the show.
Thanks so much.
To find out more about our show, guests, or to listen to past shows from our archive, please go to www.houseofmysteryradio.com.
Show's over for now. Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Well, good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.
You've been listening to the House of Mystery radio show. To find out more about our guests, hosts, or shows, go to www.houseofmystery.com.
Show is over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Well, good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.